evening and welcome to episode 52 of the Duck Tease podcast, brought to you by LegitMTG.com. My name is Erin Campbell. It is no secret that I love a man who can make me laugh. And my host tonight, my guest tonight, can certainly go ahead and do that. You may know him as a commentator from Star City Games. You may also know him from the newsing, the interviewing, and whatever else he gets his adorable little hands on. Hello, Ruben Bressler.
Hi, how are you?
I am great. I am so happy you're here with me.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I attach the suffix inning to the end of everything and then make it my own.
Yeah, it's funny. I know people, you are somebody that people have wanted me to have on for a while, and we just didn't either didn't have the time, like my guests had been sort of predetermined for me, or I just didn't think you'd be interested because you're kind of a big deal.
You know, everyone keeps telling me, not everyone, a lot of people tell me that I'm like this celebrity in this sub-sub-subculture we live in, and I don't see it that way. Like, I was talking with, I think it was KYT, the first time I met Carl Young Tom of the A-Team podcast, and he was like, well, Ruben, you're more famous than I am. And I said, wait a second, that can't possibly be true. And then I looked at, like Twitter followers and number of comments, and I was like, I guess, but there's no way that should be true. Like, I just have a louder microphone, I guess. I mean, I appreciate it. Don't get me wrong. But it's very weird to me to be, hey, you know, recognized outside of Magic tournaments is weird.
Yeah.
Really weird. Like, where did I get recognized? I was at a soccer game. I was at a Columbus Crew game when I used to live in Columbus. And I had just started doing, I think I had just done my first newsening. Or no, this was after I moved to Roanoke. So it was a couple months later, and someone recognized me when I was visiting my parents back home. Yeah, that's what happened. Okay, so I was visiting my parents, and someone recognized me in the stadium in Columbus.
What?
And I was like, that is weird.
Were you like on the Jumbotron or something? Or
no, I was just like getting food from the concession stand, and so somebody walked past and said, are you Ruben Bressler? And I was like, yeah. Are you following me? It happened a couple times in Vegas at Grand Prix Vegas, although there were 5,000 players there, so that's not that surprising. But, you know, still to get stopped in the hotel lobby when I'm about to go to an open event, you know, when the open's in a town and people are like, hey, Ruben, how's it going? And I'm like, hey, guy, I don't know, you know, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, I wish everyone could be famous just so that they could see that it's not the end all be all.
Yeah.
But it's nice. I'm a little bit of an attention whore, but not a huge one.
Are you an only child too?
No, I have a younger sister.
Okay.
And she is a smaller, younger female version of me. she's just this powerhouse. Like, I've seen her, and she's in politics. She's a community organizer for was one of the community organizers for Southern Ohio for the Democratic Obama campaign.
Oh, wonderful.
And she is a powerful individual. And so, yeah, like seeing her take down seasoned politicians in town hall meetings is awesome. I just happen to have turned my attentions toward a stupid children's card game instead.
Oh, hey now.
Well, I play it too, so.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, I've just recently started experiencing the, you know, the fringe element of what you'd call, you know, the fame thing with the quotation marks. Like, I was at a PTQ this weekend, and somebody had walked past me, and they were like, are you Erin Campbell? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, I love the Duck Tease. And I'm like, what? And I'm always in such disbelief. Like, I don't go into situations thinking anybody listens to my show. I don't think anyone's downloading, subscribing. I just assume nobody cares. And
well,
it's really weird.
You may have seen, I took a picture of my EDH box. There's a Duck Tease sticker on the EDH box. Like, I've heard the show before.
Yeah, that's awesome. But I never go into it, and I don't think about it like that.
Well,
so
me neither. Yeah, it's very strange.
It's also strange because yours is at least visual. Like, you're a lot of what you do, you're on video, so it seems more natural, I guess. But other than my Twitter avatar, I'm really just a voice. So people are literally just listening. You know, they're standing around a PTQ. You know, people are talking, the crowd is going, and somehow my voice is sticking out to them, and they're like boop 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 boop, like a sonar. And it's like, of all the voices you figured out mine. It's weird,
Exactly.
but.
Well, I have a pretty unique sounding voice. I don't know where that came along. I've realized this from years of doing stand-up comedy that my voice is just unique sounding in some way. And so initially, I was most recognized by people when they heard my voice because of the In Contention podcast. And I used to write for Star City Games before I got hired full time and stuff like that. But mostly I would get recognized for the In Contention podcast before I got hired by Star City. So that was weird at the beginning, because you never think that they're all of these people listen to it. But of course, when you look at the numbers of how many people are actually listening, it's bound to occur. There are millions of Magic players and they can't all not read you. So.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's kind of what contributes to my, naivete about the whole thing is I purposely don't look at my numbers. Like I know the only numbers I can tell you are how many Stitcher subscribers that I have. I don't know how many downloads I get. I don't know how many views I get. I purposely try to shield myself from that. So because I've managed to keep myself in this little bubble, when people do recognize me, it sort of, conflicts with that because I'm thinking nobody cares and I don't
Sure.
want to know. And I'm just like, la, 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 la. And then people come to me and I'm like, oh, that's. I didn't expect this.
Well, and the other thing is that most people, I know I did. This is why I started playing Magic, is because it was a community. I mean, I liked the game. And then when I got into the community, I realized, hey, this is a community full of outsiders. And no one, these are all the, this is a collection of outsiders from their own individual communities, right? So none of us are used to being talked to and recognized for this hobby, because there were only like three of us in our high school and we all knew each other. So being recognized by the other three people in all the other high schools is just a weird experience.
Yeah, that was something I wasn't expecting either. Like I played World of Warcraft for about 6 years where I hid behind a computer screen and in my personal life, I'm very extroverted and very social. And when I quit World of Warcraft, I was really looking forward to getting back to a social game where I could look at somebody and I could touch them. Like I could, they're really there, they're tangible. And I was really surprised that when I started playing Magic and I started going to my LGS, how awkward I had become. Like I couldn't even look my opponents in the eye. Like I would look past them, or I would look down at their mats, or I was stuttering. And I'm just like, when did my skills become so atrophy? Like when did I become that awkward kind of outsider again? And it took me a good
Right.
year or two to like get used to dealing with people because I was so used to having a headset on and I was so used to, lounging around in a ratty t-shirt, not having to worry about that. And I've had to really sharpen my skills again coming back to Magic because you can't just be a social, hermit and play this game. It doesn't
Right.
really work that well.
Well, there are some people that manage to make it worth work being I forget what the word in Japanese is for the people that never leave their house, but you can do that with Magic Online. And I've never really been that guy. I'm sure that you're surprised to hear that. But no, when I was in middle school, I was a very, very shy kid.
Really?
Yes, very, like painfully.
Hmm.
And I don't know, one day I just decided I wasn't going to be that guy anymore. And I stopped. And people were like, oh, well, that's Ruben's a human being now. And I started, doing theater, and in between my junior and senior year of high school, I went to Israel,
Wow.
and in Israel I had this attitude because when when you meet new people, you can just create whoever you want to be. So I just became this outgoing person. And at the end of this trip, I had there was going to be a talent show for the trip for the 30 or so people that were on the trip, 35 or whatever. And one of our chaperones for the trip suggested that I do something. And I was like, well, what the hell should I do? And he was like, well, I don't know, get up there and talk for 5 minutes. And so I put some stuff together. I used to do this Gollum impression. I still can, but I do this Gollum impression, and I just told inside jokes about the trip, and they loved it. And that was the first time I ever did stand up. And so, I've been doing stand-up for 8 years or 9 years. How old am I? For ever since, and just being outgoing and talkative. And luckily, I can string sentences together without stumbling over them, which makes me a bit of an oddity in the magic community. And I'm also lucky enough to not be miserable looking, which also makes me good on camera,
That's
which is
true.
also a bit of an oddity in the magic community. No offense intended. I'm just saying that, these are some things that I happen to have been gifted with, And I also have the passion and the knowledge of having played Magic since 1998 and having a near dyadic memory or didactic memory so that I can memorize all the Magic cards and all this stuff that make me good for this random, really tiny, really specific job.
Yeah. And to think that you're taken, like you list all those wonderful skills and it's like, man, you're not even single. Like, oh.
Well, I'm terribly sorry. But there, as you know, most young women under a certain age don't care about any of that.
Well, they should. If we've learned anything
Luckily,
from the Finkel debacle, they should.
right. One of them who isn't even a Magic player managed to lock me up.
Well, we
So.
will certainly talk about that later, as I'm very curious as to how you are in relationships. So we'll certainly touch on that. But I want to talk about this past weekend because there
Spoiler
was
alert, I'm awesome. No, I'm kidding. Sorry.
Yes, you are, and that's why you're here. So this past weekend was the Invitational, and from what I understand, record-breaking attendance, very well received, very big deal. I really enjoyed your interviews with Osip and Tom. I got a huge kick out of those. What was it
Thank you.
like being there amongst the crowd and just the rush of it all? Like, what was that like?
The Invitational is an experience. It's not like a Grand Prix. Grand Prix are awesome. I went to the first Pro Tour I ever went to was in Montreal, and Pro Tours are awesome. But there's something different about the Invitational in that all of the players that are playing in the Invitational, especially on Friday, which is day one of the Invitational before the Open starts, all these players know each other, and it's a very specific subset of good Magic player. Because you go to a PTQ and there are faces you don't recognize of good players, because they'll come from far away or because they're relatively new. The Open Series, though, breeds these really good grinders. It's basically all you can call them. They go to all these events and they choose to go to Open events over PTQs because that's where the competition is and that's where, the accolades are. In addition to that where being the money is, usually if there's not a Grand Prix nearby. And so day one of an invitational is just this really cool, it's not even, it's because the rest of the weekend's like a festival. The rest of the weekend, the artist is there, the altarists are there, there's all these side events going on. You can go to the Open and not even play in an event and have a great time just hanging out and doing side events. But on Friday, it's a very, I don't even know how to explain it other than it's like you've seen all these guys before. You don't know exactly where from, you don't remember exactly where from, but the worst player playing has top eighted an open. And it's a great experience that this new subculture has arisen. And it's a ton of fun. Every match you watch, the play is good. Very good most of the time. There's no dearth of great feature matches every round that you can watch. It's a real pleasure to be at the Invitational, and I love being a part of it too.
Now, here's something that always confuses me, and I'll admit I, and hopefully you can help me with this. So, well, how exactly does it go? Because I know what I like to watch you guys on the stream, and you guys have the little tabs underneath the viewer. So it would say legacy. There was a legacy tab, a standard tab, an Envy day one tab, an Envy day two. I was very confused as what was
Sure.
going on. So can you
All
break
right.
that
So,
down for me?
yeah, absolutely. The Invitational is a 3-day event.
Okay.
The Invitational weekend is a 3-day event.
Okay.
The Invitational starts on Friday and it goes through Sunday. The
Okay.
Invitational itself is 16 rounds cut to top eight
Okay.
between the two formats.
Okay.
This past time we had 8 rounds well, each time we have 8 rounds on Friday, 8 rounds on Saturday, top eight on Sunday.
Okay. And
So day one, you have
have
to
to
play both
play.
formats.
Okay.
Absolutely. So day one is standard for 4 rounds, then legacy for 4 rounds.
Okay.
Then everyone who's in the top 100 and some or better, or had a record of 5-3 or better, made it to day two.
Okay.
Then day two is 4 rounds of standard, 4 rounds of legacy. Then it's cut to top eight, which takes place on Sunday.
Okay, because that's what
Now,
also confused me is that, especially when I was looking at the deck list, like I was seeing like they had a top 16 standard deck list, but then I was watching the videos and I was like, wait a minute, that was Tengen and Eric, but they weren't on this list. So I really didn't
right.
know what's going on.
So we also, well, the other events that happen are like we usually do. Saturday is a standard open,
Okay.
which anyone can enter. And Sunday is a legacy open, which anyone can enter.
Okay.
And so the lists that you click on, you have to be careful to see, is this a standard open list or are these lists from the invitational that are the standard format?
I see.
Because we had we had one tab that was like decks that had that were 7-1 or better in the invitational, and then there was top 16 from the open.
Right.
And the open was 961 players or something ridiculous like that. 11 rounds with a cut to the top eight. It was pretty insane.
Right.
Turns out the Gold Rush is a pretty good promotion. Get people out.
I
We
would say
set
so.
yeah, we set the record for the biggest standard open and the biggest legacy open. Legacy was the size of a standard open. It was like 540 or something like that.
That's wild.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic.
That
We didn't
must
get
feel
out of
good.
there. Yeah, well, we didn't get, I mean, I didn't get out of there on Sunday until 2:30 in the morning, and I was on the first crew back to the hotel. There were still people putting stuff away into boxes by the time I was told to leave.
Right.
But yeah, it's to be at Star City Games and in the role that I am at this point in the development of the Open Series and of Star City Games and of Magic coverage in general, it being in the thick of it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's definitely a good time to be a part of it. Like I said, I played World of Warcraft for a while, and I feel like when I got out was when a lot of people were getting out. And I feel like I've sort of watched World of Warcraft decline since I got out, and almost like I've watched the ship sink. And when I jumped over to Magic, I feel like it's been the opposite, where when one ship was sinking, another plane was taking off. I came back to the game around Innistrad. And from what I understand, a lot of people came back for Innistrad. Like, it was really good at getting people back to the game, or just getting people into the game in general. And it's just been sort of fun comparing the numbers of, WoW's numbers are declining. They're down to like 7.5 million players, and then Magic was recently estimated at 12 million players, and the attendance just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and just makes me feel like I made the right choice in terms of, becoming a part of this community and focusing towards this game instead of WoW.
Well, it helps that they made the game so good. I mean, I wouldn't say that. I mean, I was never into WoW, so I can't
Right.
speak to that sort of, I hesitate to use the word metagame, but that sort of life. I've never been a computer gamer. I've never been a video gamer, really. Like, the only game I really have played is Magic. Because my competitive outlet before that was soccer, right? I was a big soccer player. I wanted to go to college to do it. Then I tore my ACL. And I
Wait a
stopped
minute.
playing soccer.
You're Jewish and you were in sports? It
That's right.
doesn't normally
Hey, man.
happen.
Well, not anymore. But in the 1940s, Jews dominated the NBA. George Mikan was the first big man that dominated the league. I think he was, I'm pretty sure he was Jewish. There were Jews all over the place in the NBA and in early NFL. It just so happens that we aren't anymore because we got, I don't know, because we got better at other things like talking on television.
That's
Like I am.
true. That's true.
So, anyway, let me go back to my point before I get myself into trouble here. I played soccer very competitively. I'm still a soccer referee. And I tore my ACL my junior year of college, and I needed a competitive outlet. And I started playing Magic very seriously at that point. I'd learned to play Magic when I was 13 or 12 or something like that. But up till that point, I wasn't a regular PTQ guy. And then I decided that I was going to do that. So.
Can you share any sort of behind the scenes dish that the viewer didn't necessarily get to see, or those of us who weren't there didn't get to see?
At the Invitational?
Yeah.
Behind the scenes dish. What do you mean? Are you looking for scandal, or are you just looking for weird behavior,
Yeah, just
or
what
the
was,
way
I mean,
people
there's gotta be
behave?
some craziness there,
Well, this weekend we had Cedric as one of the commentators, Cedric Phillips, the online content coordinator and also commentator extraordinaire. He is a treat to work with. I don't get intimidated very much when I am doing commentary. The only time that I am is when I'm doing commentary with Cedric because he's just that much better than I am. And he is so good on camera. And as soon as the camera shuts off, he is a wild animal. It's so much fun to watch, to see what his reaction as soon as he gets up from the chair, to be like, I've been sitting in this chair for like 90 minutes. I'm so glad I'm up and stuff like that. And he loves throwing daggers at his friends like Patrick Sullivan and stuff like that. So that's always fun to see. I had a funny interaction with Jerry this weekend, actually, right after he made the top eight.
I'm
Jerry
so
sort of,
glad he cut his hair.
I know. Well, yeah.
I was one of the people where I'll admit I was focused on it, and every time I would look at him, I would just see Silva from Skyfall. And I'm just like, Jerry, what are we doing? What are we doing? And
Sure.
I couldn't look past it. Maybe I'm shallow. I don't know, but
I mean, it's just hair, it'll grow back. That's what my mom said when I dyed my hair when I was younger. So, anyway, I had a funny interaction with Jerry at the last invitational, or no, two invitationals ago, he didn't have a great invitational. And I said to Jerry, "Hey man, you can't win them all." And he said, "Yes, I can." And then he wins the next invitational. And so before the start of the top eight of this invitational, I said, "Hey, Jerry, can't win them all." And he said, "Why not?" And he walks past me. Then after he lost, I said, "Hey, Jerry." And he grinned at me and he walked. He just left because he knew what I was going to say. That was a fun little interaction that I had
You
with him. But
jinxed him.
yeah, he has a, I think he'll be fine. He is a monster. He is unbelievably good. It's just so hard to believe how much better he is than everybody else. And he is just one of the most talented people at this game that I've ever seen play. He thinks so far ahead. He plays a deck, blue, white, red, flash, that should have a bad matchup against everybody, and then makes the top eight with it. Right? So, that's just incredible.
Is there anything else you feel that sets Jerry apart other than that foresight? Because I mean, because we tend to hear very general ways that people describe the pros, and you
Sure.
used a lot of the adjectives, and I'm not saying they're wrong, but I would like to think that there's maybe a little more than that. Like, what sets him
Absolutely.
apart from the Matt Costas or the Reed Dukes or anything like that? Like, what is it that you think makes Jerry unique in that regard?
Well, what makes Jerry unique, and first of all, I'm going to say this, Matt Costa and Reed Duke are going to be in the Hall of Fame. So, let's not,
Of course.
but here's, they're incredible also, and I have equally good things to say about them. But living in the same city as Jerry, I have some unique insight.
Oh my.
First of all, Roanoke, the Roanoke crew of Todd Anderson, Brian Brown-Dwynne, Brad Nelson, Jerry Thompson, Chris Van Meter, they are, first of all, it's their full-time job to work in Magic. And so they are around the cards all day. Second of all, they have each other to work off of. So they have their own brains to pick while they're working on ideas, whether or not they end up on their own, personal favorite types of decks, like Jerry does with Blue White Red Flash, to get what the other side is thinking. They just put in an incredible amount of work, like 40 hours a week of playing and playtesting and theory crafting Magic, at least. It's just mind-blowing how much work they put into it. Jerry in particular is just gifted. There's in the way he thinks about the world and in the way he thinks about Magic, there's just no other way to put it than he is different. And he's got a little bit of the Messiah complex going on, but there's good reason for it. It's because he's one of, if not the best, at thinking ahead and knowing what opponents are going to do and knowing what a metagame is going to look like. And he's just a joy to be around and watch, to be able to see that type of greatness.
Yeah, he's one of the few people I've never actually been in contact with. Like, I've never, I've been to events. Like, I was at SCG Philly, and Brad Nelson was there, and Van Meter was there, and I was in proximity to them. But he's one of the few people from SCG I don't think I've ever shared a room with, or I've ever been in the same space with. And I would like to just see him play. Like, I think he's somebody, like you said, where he'd be fun to watch,
He's
and like.
also very intimidating. I don't know if you've ever watched him play.
I tend to be intimidating myself, so it takes a lot to scare me.
Well, a lot of top players have a style, have just like this thing that they do at the table that is them. Like if you watch Reed Duke play, and I've watched Reed Duke play a lot, he looks like he is an alien intelligence figuring out humanity. Like he just goes into his own mind, shuffles his hand, and when he comes out of his shell,
He knows exactly what to do and follows that plan, and he just tears you apart. Brad is well known for being one of the most intimidating in-game presences in the world of all
Brad
of Magic.
Nelson?
Brad Nelson, yes.
No.
If you go back to 2010 and you watch some of his old videos, he is one of the most intimidating people you will ever watch play Magic.
I just don't see it.
But that's because he doesn't do that anymore. I'm telling you. In 2010, he would control the pace of the game. He would the questions that he would ask in game would lead his opponents to play worse, basically. He's also just an intimidating guy. Like, he's a big,
I've never
powerful...
felt that. I actually found him to be rather jolly, like jovial.
Well,
and...
yeah, outside of the game, sure. But I've played against him in like friendly drafts, and it is. It feels like the spotlight is on you. He is a tough one to play against.
Okay.
Jerry just has this when you play against him, you have this feeling that you're just not up to it. You just don't feel like, I don't know how he does it, but it just, whenever you're playing against Jerry, he's always four steps ahead, and no matter what move you make, he's not surprised by it, and it's mind-blowing.
Now I look forward to like maybe having that one, you know, fluke opportunity when I go to an open and we somehow get paired together. Like, I get nervous. I will admit I was nervous one time playing next to somebody. I was at the WMCQ and Owen Turtenwald was there. And I kind of don't really care for Owen to begin with, but I respect what he's done for Jund and as a Jund authority. And I was playing Jund at the time and we weren't playing each other, but he was sitting next to me. And I was so freaking nervous. And I was like, do not fuck this up. Like, do not let him catch you playing Jund badly in front of Owen Turtenwald. Right. And I was intimidated in that regard. Because I just, I don't know, it's a different kind of intimidation. Like, I can't really explain it, but that was really one of the only times I can say a pro made me feel that.
And there are some pros, and Owen is certainly one of them, that I don't feel like have a particular style of intimidation. They're just intimidating because they're better.
Yeah.
Like, Owen Turtenwald, Todd Anderson, I don't feel has a particular style that makes you feel like he's better than you. Josh Utter-Layton, the player of the year, I don't feel particularly intimidated by at the table, except for to say that I know he's leagues better than me. But there are other feelings associated with some of the other big names in the game that just feels different.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. So I did a little homework on you, like I do with all my guests, Ruben, and I found your first article that you wrote in 2008.
Oh, my God. What's it called?
I don't recall the title element. I didn't write it down in my notes, but it was quite good. There was a little bit of talk of fast food in there, and you had some competitive aspirations at the time. You were looking to break into the competitive scene. Just doing what you do, being a commentator and everything, do you still get to indulge in that at all, or – you know, is that something, are you prohibited? Is it anything like that?
No, I'm not prohibited. Okay. Like, I still play in PTQs. I still play in the SCG events that I'm not working if I want to. Like I said, that Magic became my competitive outlet. I did very well in some PTQs. Unfortunately, didn't get to travel to the Pro Tours that I was qualified for because I had to deal with my parents that I wouldn't go overseas during the school year. For the Pro Tours that I was qualified for, which is a reasonable thing to do.
Sure.
And then somewhere along the line, I got very invested in stand-up comedy, and I had to work harder at my schoolwork. And then when I decided to become competitive again, I just didn't have the same need to win that I once had. I wouldn't say that my competitive fire was just gone. I just didn't feel the need to prove myself anymore. And so... I much prefer the role that I have now. I much prefer being involved in the highest, you know, upper echelons of competitive Magic, but being there as sort of an observer, not really as someone who needed to win to make a living. Because I also have – the other thing is I also have tilting issues. I am a very bad loser. And so being able to go to an event and be involved in the event and never lose is awesome. I haven't lost in months.
Yeah.
So being being, and also I'm just better at this. I'm better at being a community spokesperson slash news deliverer slash writer, you know, commentator, doing this. I'm just better at this. And I also, and I greatly enjoy doing this. And so playing Magic is fun. And I do it to keep sharp mostly now. I haven't played in a long time, but in a big event and done well in a big event in a long time. But I have enough of a resume that I know that I'm good, and that if I did put in all the work, that I could be good, mm-hmm. like very good. But I don't have that need. Mm-hmm. I don't foresee a time where I will think to myself, I have to go and become a gold level pro to prove to everyone that I'm good at Magic. And also, I don't have a need to do that to prove to myself that I'm a good human being, mm-hmm. right? I am very comfortable in the role that I have now. And so not being able to play competitive Magic as often as a lot of my friends do, yeah, that's unfortunate. But I would so much rather be doing what I'm doing now.
That's something I could probably learn from you, Ruben, is, you know, that's something I've struggled with is, like I said, in tying into the tilting issues. It's like, you know, I came from, and I hate to beat the horse to death, but playing World of Warcraft, I did a lot of raiding. I was a high-end raider. And a lot of my value as a blogger and a lot of my value as a podcaster came from the fact that I was good at what I did. I was in one of the top 200 guilds in the country. We were downing heroic content. You know, people would look at my armory profile and drool because of how good my gear was. And when I came to Magic...
Is this what it sounds like when other people talk about Magic?
I didn't stay on it for too long, but...
You know, yeah, I know,
When I did come to Magic, though, it's like I came to Magic being terrible. You know, I wasn't even winning rounds in FNM. Oh. I was awful. And like I said, I got it instilled in my mind that without being good at something, I had no value. So when I was starting the podcast, when I started the deck tease, I was really worried that that was going to affect me, that people would listen to the show and be like, this bitch can't win FNM. Why would we listen to her? And one thing that I've really learned the longer I've been in this community is that you don't have to have one to have the other, where some of the bigger personalities, like Heather, Revised Angel, rarely plays, mm-hmm. Is not a Hall of Famer, doesn't want to be, is very, very casual by her own admission. And she has a huge following, is very loved and does a lot of good. And that's something I'm starting to come around to, is that even if I'm not good at the game, I'm still good at something in this community. And, you know, it's not being held against me that I'm not good. And I'm finally starting to learn that my value is not tied to how good I am.
Right.
And I
well,
think that that might help me get over the tilt, because that's part of why I think my tilt was there, was because
yeah,
I felt like my
Tony
value.
Kornheiser was never a professional football player. Mm-hmm. You know, he was never a professional athlete. Bob Costas was never a professional athlete, but they're very, very good at their job and very, very respected by everyone. And some types of those people are just in the Hall of Fames for sports they've never played professionally. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been lucky enough to find my niche.
Yeah.
And I'm very comfortable where I am.
And I'm starting to get comfortable with mine too. So another thing I really, really wanted to get your opinion on is there's been a lot of criticism lately regarding coverage in Magic. There were a couple articles on Star City. I think it was a 3-4-part article
yes.
on the Select side. And, you know, there have been other people that feel like they have their own ideas. And it's not just unique to Star City. It's coverage across the board. But it's one of those things that everybody seems to think they have the answer for. And everybody thinks they know what's what. And coming from somebody who sits behind the table yourself, how do you feel when you read these things and these criticisms?
Well, the first thing you have to remember is these are Magic players. They all think they're right.
Yeah.
And they're very smart. For the most part, the Magic playing populace is very smart, young men with disposable income. Mm-hmm. And that's the type of person you're dealing with. And so when you're dealing with, you know, very smart individuals, they are usually right. But when they're wrong, they think they're right 100% of the time. So you have to take all of these opinions and weigh them, you know, against what you know to be true. Mm-hmm. The 4-part article series by John Butler that you're referring to was a great experience reading that and seeing the reactions to it, because we published that
yeah.
for a reason. We wanted everyone to have this conversation from the perspective of Mr. Butler, who was deeply involved in sports on television. And so trying to get magic over the hump onto the next step was a great conversation to have. And I hear a lot of these conversations, and I think that for the most part, much of the criticism is at Wizards and not at Star City Games, because many of the things that are suggested are things that Star City Games just can't do. Like, for example, correcting the tournaments so that you could play, so that you could always have magic on television, right? Mm-hmm. Currently, the way it works is the round starts and everyone plays simultaneously. Whereas with something like StarCraft or League of Legends, you can have this round be this feature match and then pause another feature match that you want to do half an hour so that you're constantly showing television back to back to back to back. You just can't do that with a sanctioned Magic event.
Sure.
And so, and you know, unless Star City Games wants to unsanction Magic, which would never happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And just run, you know, Wild West style with their own rules, then that's just not going to happen. So a lot of the stuff we can't use, but there's some stuff we can, and we talk about in-house and we discuss, you know, how better can we make our show? And we've done a lot of it. I think that, and we're certainly going to implement more of it as the years go on. So it's a constantly evolving system. We're not ever going to get it perfect, mm-hmm. but every year, every month, we're going to get it better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we don't do something, keep harping on it. And if enough people agree with you, we'll go, hey, we should probably have a meeting about this, since 100 people have suggested this over the past 6 months or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, because I listen to Twitter and Facebook and G+ and Reddit constantly, because I want to know what everyone else is thinking outside of this bubble.
Do the other commentators?
I assume so.
Okay.
I assume that that all the commentators do. I know for a fact Cedric does, because mm-hmm. he's the online content coordinator. He takes in everything. Mm-hmm. I know that Joey Pasco, my podcast co-host, mm-hmm. is deeply involved in the social networking aspect and is constantly wanting more opinions. And so, I'm always wanting people to tell me what they think. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I'm going to use it all. That means I'm going to put it into my brain, decide how we could use it. And if it's not something we can use, then not going to use it.
Mm-hmm. My only quibble, sorry.
No, you're good.
I was just going to say my only quibble and the only thing that I would like to see, and I don't know if this is possible or not, but I really enjoy when you're watching the main Wizards coverage that you can see the people's hands.
Right.
And I feel like being able to do that really steers the coverage. Like, I feel like it takes it in a better direction. Like, I feel like there is sometimes the commentators will, and I'm not saying it's you necessarily, but, you know, there are a lot of times where they will spend a lot of time speculating what's in their hand. And I feel like if we could just already see what was in their hand, you know, that could just steer the discussion in a better direction, in a more
Absolutely.
Certain direction. How and hard would that be to implement?
If it were me, you're more than welcome to criticize anything that I've done. This is fine. I'm in
right.
your wheelhouse.
I tell you.
So, but you're right. I am not one of the ones that tries to figure out what's in people's hands. I will typically say something like along the lines of, so let's assume that he has blank. Mm-hmm. So they implemented the first ever guys standing next to match with iPads.
Yes.
Technology at Pro Tour Montreal. And Star City Games would love to be able to do that. Unfortunately, the setup for Pro Tours is so much grander mm-hmm. than anything that Star City can even come close to doing. You know, we're just a little mom and pop shop. You got to remember that Star City's not always been the Yankees.
Well,
right?
Here's the
thing. We've not always been this huge, and especially SCG Live, which has only been around for like a year and a half, really, on how big of a stage we're on. Like, I got hired a year ago. Previous to me, it was literally just Glenn doing my job, and they would have other people occasionally fill in when Glenn needed to sleep, right? So it was tough. You know, we're finally getting to the point where we're not, you know, trying to hold the ship together with both hands.
Sure.
And so this is something we'd love to get done eventually, because poker took off because you could see the hands.
Yes.
Like, that's the only reason why poker took off. Previous to that, there just wasn't interest in watching it on television. People would play, just like Magic, but they wouldn't watch on television. Mm-hmm. Getting that information and getting into the player's mind space is very important. Mm-hmm. It's not somewhere where we can do it for Star City coverage yet.
Okay.
But I would be surprised if it didn't happen at some point in the next 5 years, assuming Magic just keeps exploding in popularity.
Okay. And like I said, that's really the only thing I could think of that I would really, you know, submit as feedback. What about you? I mean, are there things that you, like when you go to these meetings or when you have discussions with people, I mean, are you, you know, can you say that you're 100% satisfied with the covers? Like if there's anything that you would change, what do you think you'd change?
Oh, absolutely. There are always things that I think that I could be better at.
Like
that,
what?
That the coverage could be better at. I want, I don't think that there's, it doesn't feel like there's a big connection between the players in the tournament and the coverage.
Okay.
What I mean by that is when you tune into NFL, you see interviews on the sideline,
mm-hmm.
or you see pre-done pieces in the locker rooms, or you see sideline reporters reporting from where something has happened. And you don't have enough of that in Magic. Again, this is another problem of just not being big enough yet. Like we just don't have the space, we don't have the time, we don't have the people, we don't have the money to be able to have reliable sideline reporters being able to do that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I would love to be able to do it. I think that it would add a lot to the game to be able to tastefully, in much the way that football, like you can't just walk up to a guy after he lost a match and say, so you lost that one, huh? Tough break, kid. You can't just do that. And you also can't walk up to the winner and say, hey, you smashed that guy, while the other guy's just sitting there pouting at the table, sleeving his sideboard back up or whatever. And so there's lots of space there to be able to be explored that I would be surprised if we don't try it eventually, but we're just not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Magic is still small potatoes.
Can we really say that, though? I mean, that's something I have to
admit.
Man. I don't know. That's something that kind of has annoyed me a little bit. And I know I feel like there's a sense of false modesty with people sometimes. Like, for example, it's what I call Taylor Swift syndrome. Like, for example, when Taylor Swift wins awards and she always has that face like, me? Like, I've only sold 25 million albums and I'm what? Like, how? What? Like, you can't do that after a certain point. And I feel like there's we've reached a point where we should be able to say it's big. It's very big right now. And especially when you go to tournaments. And for example, I went to SCG Seattle, had a really good time. But one thing that really perturbed me was we started the tournament an hour and a half late because we didn't have the tables or the seating for it. Now, there's been a consistent upward trend of more attendance. So you would think that would be something that we would have expected by now. And I feel like with every event, there's still that Taylor Swift face of all these people are here. Like, we didn't think anyone would come. And it's like, guys, they're coming. Like, we need to be prepared for this now. Like, you guys, this is a big game. You guys are a big deal. And I feel like we can maybe do away with that modesty a little bit.
Yeah. On the one hand, you're right. On the one hand, we are getting bigger, but on the other hand, you know, you don't get a Nielsen rating until you hit, what is it, like 500,000 people?
I think so.
And the Grand Prix record that we set at Grand Prix Miami was 14,000
mm-hmm.
at the peak. So, you know, when you look at the big picture, you might feel like Magic is a big fish, but we're not a big fish yet. I would love to be able to get there, and we're making great strides to do it. And someday we might. And there's no harm in feeling like once you've gotten a stage where you're comfortable, like SCG Live is a really good model. Mm-hmm. And if we ride this horse for a couple of years, we're going to get there. But you also have to put on your realistic hat and say, we have less than six digits, way less than six digits. We're not even a blip on the map with most people. Mm-hmm. 90% of the world doesn't, 90% of the United States doesn't know Magic the Gathering exists. When a person walks up to you on the street and says, walks up to me on the street or walks up to me in a bar as a friend of friend, something like that, and says, what do you do? I say, well, I'm an event coverage coordinator for StarCityGames.com. And they say, what's that? And I say, we're the largest, world's largest retailer of Magic the Gathering cards. And they say, is that like Pokemon? or they say, so do you do tricks at parties? Mm-hmm. Or they say things, you know, similar to that. Is it like poker? Is it like chess? Do you play Scrabble? Things like that. That's the common. That's mm-hmm. the norm. Most people say that. Every once in a while, I'll get someone that's like, oh, my cousin plays that. I don't know what it is, but I have a frame of reference as to what you do now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, we aren't to the point yet where we can just say, what do you do? Oh, I work in the Magic the Gathering industry.
Sure.
Just can't do that yet. Mm-hmm. I would love to, but most people are still in the mindset that, you know, we're people in basements, you know, mm-hmm. with miniatures and whatnot.
And
so
we're all overweight and we don't shower and
and we're all wearing sweatpants and have neck beards. Yes.
And that's World of Warcraft, so guys. That's not magic.
Right. Sure. Well, that's not even World of Warcraft. One right. of my ex-girlfriends was a huge World of Warcraft gamer, mm-hmm. and she was, you know, the furthest picture of the stereotypical World of Warcraft player that you could ever imagine. Mm-hmm. So.
So anyway. You also have a side career in comedy. I noticed you have your own Twitter account and you seem to be doing your own thing in that area. How did that get started?
Well, before I worked at Star City Games, that was my main career path. That's what I was planning on doing. I was planning on my job being in either New York, Los Angeles, or Chicago, writing for Second City or The Daily Show or a startup like a pilot series of some kind. Mm-hmm. That's what I was planning on doing with my life. And then I managed to get offered this job out of nowhere, which was lovely. but yeah, I've been a stand-up comedian. As I mentioned earlier in my story, I started in Israel when I was on a youth group trip. Been doing stand-up ever since. Another one of my competitive outlets after I hurt my knee was that I was entering comedy competitions all over the Midwest for a long time. Mm-hmm. I did well in the funniest person in Columbus, funniest person in Cincinnati. I was a semifinalist in the Jimmy Kimmel College Comedy Competition.
Nice.
Which semifinalist meant that I was in the top 25-ish of the 5,000 or so entrants, the winner of which got to do 5 minutes on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Hmm. I and one of my good friends while I was doing stand-up comedy actually both made the semifinals. We were very proud of that. And so I've been doing stand-up comedy for a long time. I've been playing Magic longer. It just so happened that these two skills came together to be able to let me do this job. And so someday, if I'm not working in the Magic the Gathering industry, I imagine that I will be working in the comedy writing industry somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever imagine there being an opportunity that would, like, let's say you were given an opportunity to do just comedy, like let's say some, you know, plum opportunity came along and had nothing to do with Magic. Would you be okay leaving Magic behind for that? Like, does one have a priority over the other?
No. I think that I tried being a traveling, quote unquote, professional comedian for a long time. This was during my there were a couple years where all I did for money was I did stand-up comedy, mm-hmm. and I played poker. And it was a very unhealthy lifestyle, a lot of traveling, no real hours to speak of. On the stand-up comedy side of things, every once in a while I'd get stiffed by a venue, you know, and then there's the some nights, quote-unquote, quotient of things where, I don't know if you've ever heard this story, this is a very popular story among stand-up comedians where... Bill Hicks. Familiar with Bill Hicks?
I am.
Okay, Bill Hicks was doing a show, I forget where. I think it was in North Carolina. It doesn't actually matter. And he got booked to do two nights. Mm-hmm. Friday night and Saturday night. And he does a show Friday night, and he does his... This is before he was big. This is right before California Bay came out, I think, or mm-hmm. one of his early albums. And he does his bit for an hour. Immediately, you can tell that it's not working. Mm-hmm. People just aren't laughing. People are starting to talk to each other, getting very awkward. People start getting up and leaving. By the end of the show, only about a third of the audience is left. He ends his show. There's a smattering of applause, and he gets off stage, goes to the back of the club, orders a drink. Other comedian, who's the opening comedian for the night, says, "Man, that was rough." And Bill Hicks, and he thinks Bill Hicks is going to go off into this long story, and because Bill Hicks starts off and says, "Some nights, man." And then just stops. And that's the only thing he says to the guy. Mm-hmm. Next night comes back, does the exact same bit. Kills, absolutely murders, standing ovation, encore, right? Mm-hmm. People just want more, can't get enough. People are leaving saying it's the best show they've ever seen. It's the same show, exact same show. He gets to the back, sees the same kid in the back that opened for him the night before and says, "See, man, I told you, some nights." That's, you know.
Yeah.
There's comedy is a very difficult world to be in. Mm-hmm. It's possibly more difficult. You know, I've never been a professional Magic player, but if the stress of having to win every round is tough, imagine the stress of having to be funny every day, every night for the rest of your life. Because that's your job. If you're not funny, go away, right? Because we'll find someone else who's funny. Mm-hmm. Anyone can be funny, but comedy is extremely hard work.
What is it they say? Dying is easy, comedy is hard.
Yes, that's another good one. And there's a reason why I would even go far as to say most comedians have troubles with, you know, depression and psychological disorders. Like, I'm clinically depressed. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason why these types of people go into comedy, mm-hmm. and it's to exercise their demons. That's how I deal with sadness. Mm-hmm. Like, the day that my mom's mom died, a couple years ago, and she was a big part of my life, my Grandma Barb. I'm actually wearing a t-shirt that belonged to her right now. This is one of my favorite t-shirts. Anyway, she died, and I was given the opportunity and honor of giving one of the eulogies as the oldest grandchild. And I gave a eulogy at her funeral. And it was I did my normal thing where I tried to make it lighthearted and funny. And it's very difficult to get a laugh at a funeral, let me tell you. But I think I did okay. Later that night, I drove back to my home, my college in Athens, Ohio, from Granville, Ohio, to Athens, Ohio, and I hosted my comedy night. I didn't feel like doing comedy.
Sure.
Who would? But those are the kind of things you got to deal with. That's how I deal with sadness. Mm-hmm. On 9/11, when all these other people are crying, I'm cracking jokes. That's how I deal with sadness. And so that's just ingrained in me. That's why I'm a comedian. Mm-hmm. And that's never going to leave me. Just like magic's never going to leave me. If I get hired by The Daily Show, if I get hired by, you know, Paramount Pictures to go write movies, I'm still going to go PTQ and I'm still going to go play in opens and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's never going to be over. Nobody ever quits magic. and nobody ever quits comedy, really. Mm-hmm. So they're both going to be big parts of my life forever.
Yeah. Anytime you're doing comedy, as I'm sure you know, there is the possibility that you may offend somebody or somebody may take what you say the wrong way. Mm-hmm. Has there ever been a time, particularly in the magic scene, where you've done that, where somebody has taken an issue with what you've said before and you've had to, or maybe somebody's told you to scale it back a little bit after you've said something? Have you ever encountered those things?
You know, I haven't, and it surprises me. Mm. I like to think I know where the line is. And this is especially interesting given the Todd conversation that we had earlier, mm-hmm. of where's the line of what's funny?
Right.
When is trolling no longer trolling? I did an interview with Todd, mm-hmm. right? Where I trolled the shit out of him for like 10 minutes, right? And all my interview subjects know that this is coming.
Yeah.
First of all, it's a lot different when you know that it's coming. Mm-hmm. Like if Ed had walked up to, Todd and been like, "I'm going to rip up these tokens in front of you," Todd would have braced for impact. Mm-hmm. But because it was so surprising, you know, he was taken aback. Mm-hmm. I would think that more people would be surprised by some of the things that I suggest. Luckily, I also have editors to look at my newsenings, mm-hmm. and interviewsenings before I ask these questions to say, "Hey, if anything's a little much, let's edit that out." Mm-hmm. And I've checked with the stuff that's close, and it's all, most of it's gotten through, even the stuff that I expected to get cut. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would have anticipated a little bit more, but on the flip side of that, most people are pretty thick skinned. Mm-hmm. Even Todd, who has a bit of a chip on his shoulder, just because of the way that he's for some reason perceived in the magic community. Everyone knows it's in good fun, when I'm doing it on the newsening and in the interviewsening and in my little shtick when I have my character hat on, when I'm trying to be Stephen Colbert for magic. Most everybody knows the deal.
Yeah.
So they aren't too surprised by it. Certainly I've been booed at on stage and people have gotten up and left when I've done stand-up comedy. That's part of the process, you know. I have lots of jokes that I like to push the envelope with. And you know, in stand-up comedy it's even more damning if you are not funny.
Sure.
As opposed to in the magic community. In the magic community, people will move past it because it's not that unfunny, right? Because the bar for entertainment when it comes to the magic community is so low. There's only like three television shows at all. So you're going to be in the top three, right? So even if you're unfunny, people are going to give you patience and let you try it again. At a stand-up show, there's one goal. It's be funny. And if you're not, you're going away.
Yeah.
And so if you cross a line, especially there's a thing I heard recently that was, if you tell a joke, any subject can be funny, but you have to be 51% funny, because if you're 49% funny and 51% whatever the other thing is, either sexist, racist, or mean, or whatever, then you're 100% sexist, racist, or mean, and the funny doesn't matter. So you'd better damn well be careful and be sure you're funny.
Yeah. But in terms of creative input, though, I'm assuming you write your own stuff. You know, you choose how the interviewing and the news things are going to go. Like, you have control over all those things?
Yes.
Okay.
I choose my subjects. I write the bits. I've had help in the past. You know, I'm very group oriented when it comes to writing my comedy. Even when I was doing non-magic stuff, I always wanted opinions, and to see what other people think are funny. What kind of questions do you want to hear asked? What do you want to try to, what do you want to hear from Tom Martell? What do you want him here talk about on, you know, what subject would be awkward for him to talk about that you want to hear him talk about? And I work in groups like that. That's how I work as a person. Like at a party, I'm not very good at parties.
Really?
Yeah. No. Most comedians aren't. I am miserable at parties most of the time. Now, in Las Vegas when we had the podcast house, I was just this celebrity that I'm not used to being. So everyone was like, "Oh, Ruben, say something, whatever," and then I was my character basically, and everybody loved it. But I was never good at parties in college. I was never good at parties in high school. Most comedians aren't, because as a comedian, your job is to observe. And so all I'm doing is people watching.
Well, it's also different when somebody, like, you know, when you're choosing to be funny and someone points at you like, say something funny. And you're like,
yeah, that's the worst.
Yeah.
So being a stand-up comedian is miserable a lot of the time. And one of the worst things is, oh, you're a stand-up comedian. Tell me a joke. This is a bit that I do on stage, actually.
Oh.
Is I say, oh, you're a stand-up comedian, tell me a joke. There's no other profession, there's no other hobby in the world that has this. Oh, you're a taxi cab driver, take me to the airport. Oh, you're a professional boxer, punch me in the face. Oh, you're a gynecologist. Not so much that last one.
I don't know. I might say the last one, but I'm
sure. Let's take a look down there. That doesn't happen in those people's lives. And stand-up comedy is just a very unique has a very unique situation with that.
Well, I think maybe it's just the fact that, you know, your site is very big, one of the biggest, if not the biggest. And I'll admit that I might have had the preconceived notion that you might be, that the reins might be a little tighter over there, where it might be not necessarily that, you know, everything's done for you, but just more that there's more of a say in what you do. I just imagine, you know, you being on maybe a tighter leash where, you know, you're not allowed to say this and you can't say this. And this is sort of told, you know, maybe you're told what to do. And I'm glad you dispelled that, because I'm glad that's not the case.
You know, I honestly expected there to be more of that. And I can certainly see why. I mean, we are the Yankees, and the Yankees make you shave your beard, right?
Yeah.
So you would think that there'd be a lot more of that. But on the flip side of that, keep in mind, my boss is Evan Irwin. Like, that's who my boss is at work. And so, like, how seriously can you take yourself?
I don't know. You know, I have told this story a number of times, but Evan unfollowed me just from me telling him I wanted to rub his head. So he does strike, from my experience, I view him to be very serious because I love shaved heads. I think bald is beautiful. I love bald men. And I made a comment. He was one of the first big names to start following me. I think I hadn't even started my show yet. Like, I think it was really early on in my Deck Tease career. And I was like, I think I said something along the lines of, Evan Irwin, you know, you big hunk of love, let me rub your head, you know? And I had, you know, lots of exclamation points and a big smiley face. And literally, like, to the minute, I was unfollowed. And I was like, what did I do? Like, I just wanted to rub his head. Like, what's, and I thought I was being funny. I thought it was, I wasn't serious. Like, I wasn't trying to go home with the guy. I just wanted to rub his head. I ask anybody who's bald if I can rub their head. So when I hear all these stories of how, you know, lighthearted he is and how funny he is and Evan Irwin, really fun guy, I'm like, that's the one that unfollowed me for wanting to rub his head. And sure. If there is a light side of him, I certainly didn't get it. So.
Well, yeah. I guess that's one interaction that might be the only interaction I've heard of where he might not have appreciated the joke. Because usually he's very self-deprecating. Like, he knows he's from Tennessee and knows all the jokes about Tennessee.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's got five kids and knows all the jokes about having five kids.
Yeah,
and
like, I genuinely meant place no harm, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you want me to put in a good word, I can say,
please,
hey,
please do. Like, I don't want
I did
him
this
thinking
interview.
Of...
She, yeah, no, I'm just not gonna.
Cool, because I do see not. Him. Yeah, so I feel like I kind of biffed that up a little bit. It's like, I really didn't mean any harm, I swear.
Nah, I don't think it's. I mean, it's not. There's nothing there.
Cool.
But anyway, yeah, I certainly did think that there'd be a little bit more backlash to, you know, you don't think of Star City Games as being the plucky, funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
You think of Star City Games as being the Yankees, and you don't think of the biggest and the strongest as having a sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
But the flip side of that is you just think about who we have working for us. Like, you have me. I'm generally accepted as being somewhat entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
Cedric Phillips, fairly entertaining individual. Evan Irwin, host of The Magic Show, the most popular, you know, variety show basically for magic, and all the people that write for us, these are not unfunny individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it may look like it's all serious business, but it's certainly not in my experience so far. You know, I'm sure if I actually have like real responsibilities to do one day, you know, like if I'm put in charge of other employees, it might change. But certainly I haven't come across that.
Well, that's good. I can't imagine you doing well in a situation like that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Certainly not.
Yeah. So the last thing I wanted to ask you, Ruben, and I tend to ask this with certain people because I'm always curious how they're able to balance everything. So you're a commentator, you're a comedian. I'm assuming you're traveling a lot with Star City, and yet you're in a long-term relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You love your girlfriend a lot. You talk about
I
her
do.
Often. How do you keep it all going? What's your secret?
Well, the first secret, and well, first of all, let me, if you don't know, my girlfriend lives in Phoenix, Arizona.
I didn't know that.
And I live in Roanoke, Virginia.
So how do you really make it work then?
Yeah, those are far away from each other.
Mm.
And yeah, it looks a little difficult from the outside. Luckily, the girl that I'm dating, the woman that I'm dating, named Sarah, we love each other very much and are also very realistic individuals.
Uh-huh.
So we both know that we both want careers. Uh-huh. And we both know that the place to get those careers are where we currently are.
Can I ask how you met her?
Yes, absolutely. I actually wrote a very long Facebook post about this on her birthday earlier this month. We're basically characters in a John Hughes movie. So what happened was I met her at a Halloween party at Ohio University. So, by the way, this story has a title. This story is called Where's Your Boomhauer?
Okay.
We'll get there. Don't worry. I went to Ohio University for school, and OU is known for their huge Halloween block parties.
Mm-hmm.
I like to dress up for Halloween, and one year I convinced three of my friends to go as the cast of King of the Hill. One of my friends was Hank, one of my friends was Bill, I was Dale, and another guy named Joe, who we were friends with, but not as, like, not really close like me and Mike and Corey were, went as Boomhauer.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a huge block party, like 20,000 people are in, are probably more than that, actually. The size of the city is like 10,000 people. That triples when school goes in session. That triples again when Halloween happens. So there's like 100,000 people in the city at this point, in the city designed to hold like 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. And we lose Joe at one point because we're all drunk and, you know, fucking around and doing whatever. And we end up at one of my other friends' houses, who's actually top aided a couple of open series events. Terrell Boaz, if you ever see him in the commentary, mm-hmm. he's always wearing the I'm Sexy and I Know It t-shirt mm-hmm. in the coverage, because he always wears those to Magic tournaments for some reason. Anyway, we go to his house. I walk in, and the first person that I see is Sarah, and she's dressed as Alex from A Clockwork Orange.
I've never seen that movie.
Well, A Clockwork Orange is not what you'd expect a sexy woman to be dressed as for Halloween.
Okay.
Let's say. This Kubrick movie is not what you'd anticipate a beautiful woman dressing as.
Okay.
But as a book nerd and as a, you know, someone, as a movie nerd, I was immediately in love and also terrified. and I didn't approach her at all, right? So until a group, including my friend Mike, went to some back room to get away from the loud music. And I walk into the back room, and the first words she says to me are, "Where's your Boomhauer?" She didn't go to Ohio University. She was there visiting a friend, but whatever. Anyway, so we sit there and we talk for a little bit. The group, I still don't have the balls to ask for her number. After the party, I get her number from a friend of hers who, for some reason, didn't think that I was a serial killer. Luckily, I texted her. I was able to text her and said, "Hey, I didn't have the guts to talk to you at the party, but I like you." And she was like, "Oh, same." I was like, "Oh, that's nice." And so we texted for a while, and then she stopped responding to my texts one day.
Ugh.
And I thought I'd screwed something up. But as I mentioned in my note, I noted that I am optimistic, persistent, and foolish. So every few months, I just message her, see what was going on, and didn't really – I mean, every once in a while, she'd be like, "I'm good." You know, kind of thing like that. But mostly it didn't last at all. But I just kept doing it. Then, you know, I would get in other relationships and those would end. And the first place that I'd go was to her Facebook message thing and say, "Hey, what's up?" Then last October, I messaged her when I noticed on her Facebook wall that she was going to graduate uh-huh. in the spring from Arizona State with her degree in education. And I was like, "Oh, that's wonderful. She's put her life back together," because I don't want to get huge into why she wasn't responding to me. Mm-hmm. Suffice it to say, it wasn't my fault and that she needed to get other things happening.
Sure.
So she had to put her life back together. And I was like, "I'm very happy that you're getting your life underway. I'm sorry things never worked out between us," expecting to never get a response. And she responded. So, you know, "I'm sorry too. What are you up to?" I was amazed and happy. And we talked for hours that first time. And I was like, "Hey, I'm so lucky on this message already. Why not try the following?" Mm-hmm. "Hey, so you're in Phoenix. I'm going to be in Las Vegas for the Invitational, like for the week in between the Invitational mm-hmm. and the Open Series in Las Vegas. Yeah, I know we don't really know each other at all, and you're 6 hours away, and you have no reason to come visit me, this guy that you don't really know, 6 hours away uh-huh. in a hotel where no one else will be. But if you want to,
that's not creepy at all."
Yeah, that's not creepy at all. She's never going to say yes to this. Like, we may as well try. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, she says yes. And it was just the happiest moment of my life. And she drives up to Las Vegas. And I rent a room at the Hooters Hotel and Casino because the rate was insane. Like, the deal we got was unbelievable. And I'd heard from lots of other people that it was like a really good, hotel.
Oh.
And it actually was fine. Like, I would suggest it again to other people. Like, it was completely fine. It was just a normal casino.
You know, when I think like, romance, I think Hooters Casino, like, just,
you know, I'm on a budget, man. So anyway, can we get past that part?
We can get past the Hooters.
I shouldn't have told you. So anyway, the first time I see Sarah in 4 years is when I look through the peephole of my hotel room. Mm-hmm. I open the door. I say hi. She says hi. And then we kissed for like 15 minutes. It was a John Hughes movie, like, honestly.
Oh.
Yeah. And so now we're 9 months into our relationship and we have jobs far away, but, you know, we're making it work. She is a very smart, very driven, very funny, very beautiful individual that for some reason likes me back. And I am extremely lucky that that we're being able to make it work.
Yeah.
Like, and so I think that the main reason why we are able to make it work is because we don't ask too much of each other, mm-hmm. I think. We talk constantly just because we want to. There's neither of us is asking the other one to talk more or less.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of long distance relationships fail because the expectation of visiting more often or talking more often is there. Mm-hmm. I was in a previous long distance relationship that was not three time zones away. It was across the state. And so there was an expectation that it was like, hey, that's only a 4-hour drive. You should drive up to see me more often, or that she should drive to see me more often.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of began a divide that grew and grew.
Right.
I go out and see as much as I can. You know, I want to see her as often as I can. Mm-hmm. So every time that I'm in, you know, Phoenix, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, San Diego, Albuquerque, whenever I'm anywhere nearby, I make an effort to go see her, and you know, we're going to make it work. And hopefully she says she's likely going to start applying for jobs in the Roanoke area.
I was just about to ask that, like, yeah. if she would be required to come to you, or if you could do what you do without being based in Roanoke.
I really don't think so.
Okay.
I've thought about it, but a lot of my responsibilities require me to be in the office.
Okay.
Like even for this thing where I was away for the invitational,
mm-hmm.
I was out of the office for 3 days for travel, and I'm really needed in the office to help out with a lot of things.
Sure.
Based on how my job has grown.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be possible, mm-hmm. but not as likely.
Right.
Because the likelihood of finding a teaching job in Roanoke is much higher than me finding a Star City job in Arizona.
That's true.
So, you know, we've talked about it. We'll figure something out. And if it requires me to move out there, then I'm all for it. And we will have to figure that out when we get there.
Yeah.
But in the meantime, we are very happy.
Well, you sound like you've got a good attitude about it. You know, I've done the long distance thing before. My last relationship was actually in Chicago, which is only a state away. Some people feel that's long distance, some people don't. But, you know, you definitely touched on some really, I'm in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
So we were about an hour and a half away.
Right.
And I definitely feel like, I think you touched on a lot of good, really good points. The main one being is you have to be cut out for long distance. I really feel like part of the reason my relationship didn't work is because my ex-boyfriend went into it going, I can totally do long distance. I'm fine not seeing you totally fine. And then come to find out it's, well, why aren't I seeing you this weekend? Like you said, whereas I'm comfortable with space. I don't need to see my boyfriend every single day.
Yeah, I think that we are also very similar like that. Like we can go, we're currently going months without seeing each other,
mm-hmm.
which is tough.
Yeah.
It's not fun. But we'll survive.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's important that person can handle long distance. Like, I think it's something people find kind of romantic in a way. Like, they've seen too much Sleepless in Seattle or whatever. And they're like, oh, you know, there's going to be somebody out there for me and, you know, all that stuff. And then when it gets down to the nitty gritty, they're not cut out for it. And I think that, you know, that's something I'm inclined to say right now I would never do long distance again, but if I did, I would really need to know that they can hack it too, because it's something not everybody is meant for. And it's always interesting for me when I hear people say that long distance is harder than normal relationships. Like, I feel like they're not. I just feel like there's more of an emphasis on communication. Like, I think communication is a lot like listening, where everybody assumes they can listen and that they are listening, but, you know, they're not always hearing you or they're not hearing you well. And I think that's the same with communication. Where people are like, of course I can communicate. What are you talking about? And it's like, you know, yeah, but when all you have is the phone and all you have is Skype, you really need to know how to communicate. And if you can't, the relationship doesn't stand a chance. So that's why I think it puts people off, because they're really forced to communicate. And
I'm sorry, I stopped listening. No, I'm kidding. yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
I am not a big phone person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hate using the actual phone feature on my telephone. But yeah, I completely agree. Like being able to communicate effectively is a big part of why we're able to make it work.
Well, I hope you can. It sounds like you have a good thing, and I definitely love seeing the happy couple. Like I love, you know, when you tweet about her and whatnot. That definitely makes me smile. As cynical as I can be and as catty as I can be sometimes, I do like the idea of love, and I like seeing people who are truly in love be in love, and I think that's a great thing. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy about it too.
Yeah.
I think that the fact that I am sometimes to a fault optimistic is helped me not only get this job at Star City Games, which I should never have in a million years gotten a job at a non-coffee shop employment center. Like, I graduated college with English and film. Like, why am I not asking you if you want paper or plastic? There's no good reason for it other than I kept my attitude about me, kept plugging away at the various things that I was good at, got noticed, and got hired. There's no reason why this girl who I met at a Halloween party 4 years ago and then texted sporadically and then visited once on a drive to a PTQ in Pittsburgh and then didn't see again for 3.5 years. There's no reason why we should be in a relationship together. That should have died.
Yeah.
But it didn't, because I'm stupid. Luckily,
I wouldn't say you're stupid at all.
I'm optimistic.
So, if people have enjoyed what you've said here, Ruben, how can they find you? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is MoxRuby at MoxReuby. That's a pun. You can also follow my comedy Twitter at Ruben Bressler if you want to see some of my comedy stylings. That's I don't update that one as much, but it's where I put all my news about if I'm performing somewhere, stuff like that. I'm also on Facebook. I accept all Facebook friend requests.
Oh, and here I thought I was special.
Sorry. Everybody's special, just like everybody else. I accept all friend requests, but I'll let you on a little secret. Whenever your birthday comes up, I click to see whose birthday it is, and then if I don't know you, I unfriend you.
Uh-oh.
So, I mean, then you can refriend me again if you want, but I'm just telling you that's how I do things.
Interesting.
So, that's the, you can also see my articles on StarCityGames.com. Where I do a weekly preview article. I do the interviewsonings, which are on youtube.com/StarCityGamesVideo, all one word. The most recent batch is Tom Martell, Cedric Phillips, and Osip Lebedovich. The next batch, I'll let you know who the next batch
Ooh.
is Sam Black, Patrick Sullivan, and Reed Duke.
Love Reed Duke.
They were a ton of fun. Reed's might be the best one I've ever recorded. It was really funny.
Interesting.
He got really into it. And so those were great. I love doing all of they're all wonderful. Osip's was a treat just because no one's tried that style of being very like angry at me as the interview goes forward. I just thought it was hilarious. It was such a good idea to do that by Osip. All the interviews are great fun, and getting to know the magic personalities is fun. Someday I'll figure out if I can do an interviewing with myself. I think that'd be kind of funny. And so those are fun to do. The newsening will come back eventually. The reason why we're not doing it right now is because I'm just so damn busy. And so that will return. Don't worry, newsening fans. I get your Twitter and Facebook messages all the time. And I'm looking forward to the day when we can do it again as well. But it's too much of a strain on me and too much of a strain on the directors, more importantly. They've just got so much to do that we just need to let them breathe when they have a chance. And that's about, oh, I have a stand-up comedy album if you want to go listen to that. SoundCloud.com/Ruben Bressler. SoundCloud.com/Ruben Bressler. I recorded it about 2 years ago at Ohio University at the old open mic night that I created called Comedy in the Round at the hookah bar that I used to work at. And that was a ton of fun to record. My parents were there, and I recorded 90 minutes of comedy, 60 minutes of which is on this album, edited down to the choicest bits. So that was fun.
Well, I will have to listen
and
to that
that's
tomorrow
about
when
it.
I'm at work, because I've been slowly but surely working podcasts and other forms of audio enjoyment into my workday. So I will fire that up first thing in the morning, and hopefully you will help me get through my day.
Excellent. I have a cold when I recorded that, by the way. That's why my voice sounds different. But
Okay.
go listen to soundcloud.com/Ruben Bressler. My album, Suggested Friend, is on there.
Okay. Well, Ruben, this has been nothing short of a joy. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And I really had a blast. You definitely made me laugh more than any other guest in 52 episodes that I've ever had on.
Well, thank you for having me. This was great. And hopefully I'll do enough interesting things in the next, I don't know, year and a half that you'll have me on for episode 104 or whenever I'm due on next.
I would certainly love that. So thanks again.
Excellent. Thank you.
And if anybody else is listening and you've enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find me first and foremost on legitmtg.com. Then you can find me on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Feel free to pick up my episodes and leave me a positive review. You can also get in touch with me on Twitter at Original Estrus. That's OriginalOestrus. Or if you'd like to send me a little something more personal, you can always email me at estrus@elitistturks.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.